From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk rules. Made up rules. Rules people made up because they were too worried about not sounding proper. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me as they do every week, Kathy Petrus and Ross Petrus. Ross, you're talking to us from your home in Toronto. Ross, we're getting well into March now. Spring is on the horizon. What's the best part about spring in Toronto?
Well, the weather is perfect. I mean, it's cool. It's dry. I really love spring here. I actually love summer, too. It's quite dry in the summer. So we don't have that. I mean, when I lived in New York, there was incredible humidity, and we don't have that humidity here. So it's really nice. And we might say it's moose country a little bit north of us, which will lead to our opening question later. But first, I think you have to talk to Kathy, where there are no moose.
Not a single one that I've seen. Well, there might be. I haven't seen them. I don't go up into the Sierra Nevada, so... Who knows?
So that could be moose country. What's the word for moose in Spanish, Kathy?
I have absolutely no idea. And right when I said that, I'm going to have to ask. I don't know. I really don't know.
I'll say.
I think. Why do you know the word for moose in Spanish, Ross?
Kathy, I'm in Canada. What do you think?
It's I'll say. You're correct. Oh, A-L-C. Wow. Yes. I'll say. I'm going to dazzle them at the next party I go to. You know how often we start talking about moose? Mice.
Meese.
And that leads us to our question that we got from a listener.
Oh, lovely.
Carly from Minneapolis, the eternal question. Why goose geese and not moose meese?
Aha.
Kathy, I think you can answer that because...
I will, but I never really thought of it as an eternal question. No offense, Carly. It's like, I gotta say. But it's fine that you think so. Okay, it's because goose comes from the Old English gos, and its plural follows the Old English ablaut rules. So moose comes from the Algonquian, and its plural is the same as the singular.
Wow, simple as that. So, I mean, they come from two different places. They just happen to sound the same. So it's got, that's pretty much it. They just happen to sound the same. They have no relation.
Yeah, but there's a little, the question next comes, which I think is more eternal, which is why don't you say mooses?
Because there are zero plural words. Those are words that basically the plural is the same as the singular. And there are a bunch of theories why this is the case, but... For the life of us and for the life of anyone else, we can't really figure it out. That's just the way it is. And then there are also some little tricky things here, like with fish. We have two plurals for fish, fish and fishes. But Fletcher, could you tell us the distinction? There is a slight distinction between the two different plurals.
No.
Fish and fishes.
No.
Can you?
No, I would really like to know. I guess I've sort of always wondered if there was a distinction.
I'm going to give you a clue with two sentences, and let's see if you can tease out the difference. Yesterday I went fishing, and I caught a lot of fish. I have an aquarium, too. My aquarium contains many different fishes. Trout, carp, and guppies.
I would still use them interchangeably. I mean, I see that when you said fishes, you were talking about different varieties. I mean, because you used the word, you used the word different, but...
That's it.
Really?
It's similar with shrimp, but this is one where I say shrimps a lot.
I say that because it sounds funny.
Yeah, I think that's why. Actually, if you look at the word too often, I'm staring at it right now, it also looks funny. It looks funny, shrimp.
It does.
It really does.
My two-year-old talks about gooses and geese when she's talking about when she's talking about more than one goose, she will say, I see the gooses and geese. Like she'll say both.
I think this is a good time to explain about zero plural words to her, Fletcher. I think she's at the right age.
But I think we should really do a talk on what she's doing though, Fletcher, because probably what she's doing is she probably heard geese and said, that's a lot of geese. But then she learned that, but apparently what happens a lot of times with kids when they're young is they learn the exact word, the plural of, like, if you see five different, number of birds called goose. You say geese because that's what people say. But then she learned there's a rule. Hey, there's a rule to it. You add S.
Yep.
So now she's in a dilemma. Like, is it gooses or geese? The one thing she hears geese, and that's correct. The other side, she hears everyone adding S to stuff to make it a plural. So now she has to figure out what the exceptions are to this rule, which she seems to be doing. It's really interesting.
Can I take us way off track for a second?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just following this 2-year-old language thread. A few weeks back, we were talking about past tense and how we have the mm-hmm. ED ending and that sort of thing and mm-hmm. how that is supposed to sound. So I noticed that she internalized the rules and mm-hmm. also is also creating new words using those rules. So you and I would say I jumped, right? It has that, right. It has that P sound at the end. So the ED sounds like a T, jumped, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
But what she's saying is I jumpted.
Wow.
That's interesting.
Very interesting.
It ends with that T sound, but she adds the ED, the ed. So like she's internalized the rule completely.
ED is past, yeah.
Yeah.
But she hasn't yet got the nuance of it to make it
just jumped.
To make it acceptable to yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she's going to get that, certainly.
But she's got the sounds, of course, perfectly. I mean, she is using the sounds exactly as they ought to be. She just is creating that new word. Yeah, I just thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
That is.
She's internalizing English rules and applying them, and now gradually she's going to start whittling down, you know, where the sharp edges are to make it sound perfect.
Mm-hmm. Nicely put, Ross. I like that. I like that.
Thank you.
That's fine. Okay. Credit where credit's due, you know?
Also, a few weeks ago in another episode, we were talking about how people changed our language a little bit to make it more like Latin. In that case, we were talking about how people in the 1400s or so changed the spelling of some words to make them look more like Latin words. Today, we're extending that to larger rules of the English language and how people made them up so they could look more like Latin rules or otherwise let people feel like they were being more quote-unquote proper.
Yeah, let's just get one quick thing. The first real encounter with Latin. I mean, there were earlier ones as well, but the first big encounter we were talking about was the so-called Inkhorn period. And that was the 1400s and 1500s and the early 1600s. That's when a slew of words came into English from Latin. And at the beginning of printing, people tried to regularize printing, and a lot of times they based it on Latin. This is another bout or encounter with both Latin and the idea of a correct English. And this comes mm-hmm. in the 1700s and 1800s. It's later. And this is more interesting. The first one tended to be pedants and grammarians and people who were like at Oxford and places like that. The second batch is people blame the middle class for a lot of things, but this one is probably true. This is with people striving to speak more like their quote unquote betters. And this is when books came out that were telling people how to speak and sound like they were educated upper middle class people or mm-hmm. nobility.
So let's start. Yeah.
Yes.
So Fletcher, how you doing?
how you doing? I'm doing good.
Ah, you're doing good? You're not doing well?
Well, I am. I am in fact doing well, but I am good.
So.
Is that confusing?
Yes. Thank you. Look, this is one where a lot of times, I get this all the time. Someone says, how you doing, Kathy? And I say, I'm good. How are you? Mm-hmm. And they say, I'm well.
Yes.
Looking at me very significantly, like, uh-huh. you foolish, stupid twit. It's well. It's not.
Yes. When you say I am, you want to say I am good, right? Unless you're saying I'm not sick anymore, in which case you could say, oh, I'm well now.
Yes.
Now, if you say, how are you doing? The person could say, I'm doing well.
Yes.
You could.
Because it's modifying that doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if you're just saying, I'm good, that's what you want to say, is I'm good, not I'm well.
We go back to linking verbs because you're really saying, I feel good. I feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, you can also feel well, but feeling good is legitimate, and people seem to think that you can't say good. You can say good if you're saying I'm a moral person, mm-hmm. you know? I feel good.
Although I'm going to stick with one thing here. If you're digging a well for water, you can't dig a good for water. Let's get that straight. Ross,
you've shamed yourself.
But this is really interesting because this whole good well thing seems to have come from the mind of one man, Richard Bache Mead.
I love his
name.
Who
in 1869 wrote a book called Vulgarisms and Other Errors, purporting to point out improprieties of speech. And he said, a person cannot do a thing good. I'll quote him, good for well. He can do it as good as anyone else can is sometimes said instead of he can do it as well as anyone else can. A person cannot do a thing good. The proper use word to use is well. And then he went on and on with the idea of his own ideas of good versus well. And it spread.
That's what I was going to say, because in fairness to him on that one, I mean, doing it good doesn't sound as good as doing it well.
I agree.
I'll give Richard Bache Mead that.
But in this case, you're not exactly doing a thing. You're describing how you
are. Mm-hmm. That's right. But that's why I like Vogue. But Vogue came and ran with this. And they said one of the most usual and most uneducated of all daily, indeed hourly mistakes is I feel good for I feel well. They didn't, no holds barred. This is from the February 1st, 1923 issue. This is absolutely illiterate. Goodness refers to morality, not health.
If you can't trust Vogue, who can you trust, right?
But as we were talking about last week, and Kathy, you mentioned it just a second ago, feel would be a linking verb. So basically, all you're saying is I equal good.
Yeah. Right.
So that feel
exactly.
Isn't really a, you're not really talking about how you feel, like with your hands.
No.
Feel just is a word there that's linking I and, mm-hmm. and how I am.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the thing that drives me crazy is when people say, but you know, good doesn't mean well, but it does. I mean, it doesn't always mean well, but a definition is free from infirmity or sorrow. That's good. So good and well are equivalent when someone mm-hmm. asks you how you are.
I think it's pretty clear we all use the word good to mean lots of things besides morality,
like
right?
Here.
Yeah. No, but I mean, that's exactly right. To pigeonhole it into just morality is nonsense, because that word has mm-hmm. a lot of different meanings.
It makes me feel unwell.
Well, let's move on. Fletcher, is it drive slow or drive slowly? This one is interesting because there was a Weird Al Yankovic video of showing him getting out of a car, going to a road sign that said drive slow, and changing it, adding an L-Y to it. Now, was Weird Al correct in so doing?
Something I learned from you guys quite a while back was one of my favorite things that I've learned from you, and I've learned a lot of wonderful things from you, but this was about flat adverbs.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so flat adverbs, it turns out, and I didn't really know this, it turns out some adverbs don't need that L-Y on the end, and it trips a lot mm-hmm. of people up. I'm going to guess, just because you asked me, that slow is one of those flat mm-hmm. adverbs that doesn't have mm-hmm. to have the L-Y on the end.
Precisely.
So you really can drive slow.
Of course. It's a flat adverb. You don't need the tail. You don't need the li at all. It's fine. And this is another one where they've been around. I mean, the flat adverb for slow, for example, we found hundreds of examples in Shakespeare and Milton. It's there. However, in the late 19th century, or the 18th century was it, started, they thought that flat adverbs are bad adjectives and said don't use them.
The thing is, we tie ourselves in knots sometimes trying to get that L-Y on the end.
We do. And people, and this is actually a very common, this is very commonly corrected by people, including people who should know better. For some reason, this one really, I don't like it being corrected. I think it's fine. Flat adverbs are fine. They've always been fine. Let's just leave them alone.
Now, here's a question. If someone does say drive slowly, that's not incorrect, is it?
No, because flat adverbs can also, in most cases, not all cases, but in most cases, take an L-Y as well.
Yeah. You know, one that I hear a lot is when people refuse to say funny enough. and change it to funnily enough. Mm-hmm. Do you hear that? I hear that a lot.
It's funny though, because I'm just thinking though of other words that you don't think of as, I don't know if it's a big thing in Canada, but I was thinking, Ross, you know, like wicked cool. That's wicked this from Boston and thereabouts, which is a flat ad. I mean, it sounds silly, but that's a flat adverb.
But it's also interesting too how people overcorrect too, because this was an interesting case of the word seldom, as in seldom is heard a discouraging word. Seldom is an old adverb, but in the 1960s, seldom began appearing as seldomly. And they're thinking because seldom was basically not used as much. When it was used, people thought, oh, I've got to tack on the ly to make it an adverb. Isn't that interesting? Same with thus. Thus, people thusly. Say thusly.
Oh, you're right, thusly. Actually. Thusly. Yes. Oh, my God. I hadn't thought of that.
Oh, that's right. We hear thusly all the time. So this is what basically you were saying, that grammarians and other people who wanted to sound a little fancier decided that those flat adverbs were just bad adjectives. They shouldn't be used.
They thought that they were too close to adjectives. It was confusing.
Uh-huh.
So they just went out of style more than anything, because they were common. I mean, as we said before, and I think it was just like one of those things. It's like, this doesn't seem enough like an adverb. So let's make sure everybody knows it's an adverb. Lee, you know, you can't drive slow. It has to be slowly.
And it could be related back to Latin. We don't really, a lot of times we can't be too sure. It seems that it might be related to the idea of Latin, being Latin grammatically. But I don't know. We can't really be sure on that one. But the next one, we think we can. Related back to Latin. This actually comes from a reader's email to us.
That's true.
I was a little surprised in reading your article, 11 Extremely Common Grammar Mistakes, to see that you ended a sentence with, a preposition, something I was taught you should never do. And then this last sort of snarky line, perhaps you should correct your own grammar before offering advice to anyone. I love this letter. So. Okay, Fletcher, did we commit a crime?
No. We can end sentences with prepositions. This one, I don't remember when I learned it was okay, but I was glad I learned it was fine to do, because I always thought it was nonsense. And this is a situation when we really turn ourselves into knots trying not to end a sentence with a preposition.
Oh, yeah. There's contortions up the waz trying to make it like you can't end with or for or whatever. Yeah, I agree.
So explain this one as clearly as you can. What happened? And please let's disabuse everyone of the notion that they cannot end a sentence with a preposition.
Well, it does come from Latin. And it probably comes from the famous 17th century English poet John Dryden, the first poet laureate, who basically appointed himself the grand arbiter of English language. And he had a fit about ending with prepositions. One thought is that in Latin, you cannot end with a preposition. The preposition, preposition comes from the Latin. It means preposition. You're putting it pre before. And Dryden thought it was barbaric to put one at the end. I think he was wrong. I don't like his poetry either.
I'm with you. Does anyone read Dryden anymore? I don't know. Frankly,
yeah. Well, so basically in Latin, you literally can't do it. You cannot end a sentence with a preposition.
No.
In English, though, clearly you can.
Mm-hmm. And that was like what happened then. So first you have Dryden, and then we go back to the people wanting to like make sure the middle class could move ahead and look really like classy. They popularized it, and it was proper prepositional placement. It was Robert Louth, an Oxford professor, and moreover Lindley Murray, who was an American businessman who retired early after he sold supplies to the British during the Revolutionary War. So he stayed there in England, and he began writing grammars, and they decided Dryden write preposition ending bad. Murray sold, like they said, I think 14 million copies of his grammar books. So everybody had to swallow this preposition ending awful. Don't do it. We can't do this.
It's interesting because at one point I was reading a book just recently by an American lexicographer, and he was defending Louth, saying Louth wasn't saying absolutely don't do it. But I read the thing what Louth said, And he says, ending with a preposition is an idiom which our language is strongly inclined to. He even uses it right here. Mm-hmm. He ends the clause with strongly inclined to. And it prevails in common conversation and suits us very well with our familiar style in writing. But it is not that graceful, and it is more perspicacious to do it otherwise with a solemn and elevated style. And this goes to exactly what Kathy was saying. He's not saying you can't do it. He's saying everyone else does it. Everyone does it. But he's saying if you want to be solemn and elevated, and your average middle-class person wants to be solemn and elevated, so, okay, it's fine if you want to be, like, in the vulgar, but, hey, if you want to sound great,
I'm not into it. I just want to interject, though, and say Murray quoted Louth in his book, and he reworded it so it didn't end with two.
Did he? Wow, yeah, that's really interesting.
He changed it to which. Okay, Louth said, which our language is strongly inclined to. Murray wrote, to which our language is strongly inclined.
Well, you have to give Murray credit. I mean, he did his job.
This is the one that drives me crazy. Like what, that person writing us who never replied after we sent an answer back explaining want to say. A little eating of crow.
And we have a standard advice. End sentences with prepositions if you want to.
Not a bing.
Okay. Do we want to go boldly or do we want to boldly go to the next topic, Fletcher?
Aha. Okay. Now, I will say definitely that I thought of this while we were talking about ending sentences with prepositions just now, because you're wondering if it's okay to split an infinitive. To boldly go or to go boldly. I think I have learned that this is quite a lot like those prepositions, in that clearly it's something we can do in English that I think is impossible to do in Latin, and people just wanted to be more like Latin.
That's the theory. And we've read a lot of cases where grammarians of the 1700s, 1800s are saying so. I haven't really found a specific instance where they definitely say it's because Latin. We've just seen them saying, don't do it, and they're steeped in Latin anyway. So the presumption is, or maybe it's just a folktale, that it's because of Latin. Latin, the present tense, and most Latin verbs are complete. One thing that sort of slightly bothers me, though, is there are some Latin infinitives, technically, that have two words to them. I mean, no one ever mentions that. But, like, for example, this is really going to get dull for everyone else, but you can do the infinitive future of Latin would be, amare is the Latin for to love. The infinitive future would be amaturum, one word, esse, another word. So I guess you could technically split it. I've never seen a Latin person split. I've never read a Latin thing that split the infinitive.
But the bottom line, though, was back what we were saying before with everything else. Some people think it came to the Latin was the impetus to split an infinitive, whether it was because of Latin not having it or not. The bottom line was simple. It was just, you don't do it if you want to sound classy. Mm-hmm.
And to be really fair, English, old English, infinitives were one word. They didn't have the two. Then later on, the two technically became a dative with a gerund. Like love would be lufian. And then to love, you might go to with the gerund, a verbal noun for lufian, be lufien. And then the two became kind of stuck with the infinitive, and then you could split it. And that's what happened in Middle English. Then suddenly the split infinitive ended. No one did it anymore. I think like some nut went through all of Shakespeare, and I think they found one or possibly two split infinitives in all of what Shakespeare wrote.
Oh, wow.
And then suddenly you come to the 1800s and Lincoln, Jane Austen, everyone's, you know, gaily splitting infinitives again.
Dryden never split an infinitive, I want to point out. Does this surprise you?
Actually, Kathy, do you know that for a fact, or did he maybe do
something? Well, the one thing I saw said that Spencer, Dryden, Pope, and the King James Version of the Bible have no split infinitives.
Wow.
I personally that's really can't interesting. Say if that's true because I've not counted.
It's really hard not to do. And also, what is it really doing? What is it doing wrong if you do split the infinitive?
I think so. The funny thing is, as we looked into this, is that you still see admonitions against it because mm-hmm. it's perceived as wrong. Not because it's technically mm-hmm. wrong, mm-hmm. because people think it is. What was it, Ross? We have it here. The Columbia Guide says that writers should, quote, follow the conservative path of avoiding a split infinitive, especially when you're uncertain of your reader's expectations. Oxford dictionaries say it can seem like sort of weak. Don't use it in formal correspondence. So the weird thing is that incorrect impulse from the past is still like on our shoulder going, don't do it if you don't want to look stupid, you know?
But we do do it, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And there's an interesting point that was made in a book. It was saying that basically we look at infinitives perhaps differently than they used to. And hear me out for a second. I want to go to the store. Now, the infinitive there is to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that perhaps we began in the 1800s to, quote, reanalyze that sentence. And we don't look at it anymore as I want the verb and then to go the infinitive. We look at it more as I want to. And then we add what's called a bare infinitive without any to it.
Huh.
And then here's why they think that. Colloquially or casually, we say, I want to go to the store.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the supermarket today. In both cases, the to is now attached to the going or the want. It's not attached to the infinitive anymore.
Yeah.
Do you see that? We've split the infinitive automatically and we don't even look at the infinitive
I'm
anymore.
I'm going to go, you're saying. I want to go. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
I should have gone.
I want to go. The two is now attached to the verb, not to the active verb, not the infinitive.
That's fascinating. I want to. What do you want to do? Go to the store.
Yes.
Yeah, we've separated
yes.
it. Yeah.
I hear it now. Yeah.
I think that's really interesting.
I want to go. Yeah, because I must say, I don't pronounce. I mean, I'm a slurrer. I'm like,
sure.
I like being in Andalusia because they don't enunciate. I'm all I wanna, I gonna, I can, you know, canna. I don't say canna.
Canna?
I can again.
That's a little too far, Kathy.
Well,
the other interesting thing, I think, though, is split infinitives can be really useful, too. I mean, think of this word sentence here. I'm just thinking of it right now. I'm not sure it'll work, but I want you to completely finish the book. I want you to finish the book completely. I have like a slightly different impact
shouldn't it be, I want you to finish completely the book?
I want you to finish completely the book.
You.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, it sounds stupid, first of all.
But I want you to completely finish the book really gives me a feel
the
for
stress.
What to do. Yeah.
Yeah, it does have use. I think so. Yeah, definitely. The intensity of what you're saying can change depending on where you mm-hmm. put that.
So let's split. Sorry.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can find all of their books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause. And rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.